The Suspension of Distraction. In the week following 9/11, an editor of the Village Voice was asked on NPR how he perceived the effect of the disaster on the psyche of the city and its inhabitants. He characterized it as a suspension of distraction. He had noticed that people were making eye contact with each other as never before, that they were communing silently with passing glances, taking in one another's faces. They did not seem to be absorbed in life's usual preoccupations and mind states. The inconceivable event, the horror of it, the huge loss of life, the evaporation of the city's two signature buildings, had plunged New Yorkers into wordless presence in the face of the enormity of what had occurred. I don't know how long the culture of distraction that New Yorkers are so practiced at was in abeyance, because certainly a return to the norm and the normal has to be part of the healing process. But there was a lot to wake up to on that day. It revealed for sure that a fulminating dis-ease, unrecognized, ignored, and untreated, perhaps even compounded by a lack of understanding of interconnectedness, can find its way into the heart of our body politic in ways hard to protect against and wreak untold damage and suffering. We were also reminded in the most graphic way that everything is impermanent. One of the purposes of the social order in a peaceful, healthy society is to ensure a high degree of relative certainty and safety for its inhabitants through the rule of law, backed up by effective law enforcement and an impartial judicial system, a common defense, a good healthcare system, and a sense of the possible through educational, economic, and creative opportunities. That, at least, is the ideal. In practice, it is only an approximation that continually requires refining and deepening. Nevertheless, the law of impermanence is always at work, no matter how good or effective our institutions are or are not in any moment. Everything changes. Nothing remains the same for long. Things are fundamentally uncertain. In times of social strife and instability, the effects of this law seem magnified and more unpredictable. That in itself can be terrifying. Yeats observed that all things fall and are built again, but never have we collectively experienced in our own home, seared into our retinas and into our brains through images and footage that words cannot capture, and breaking our hearts, that so much could disappear so quickly. A certain innocence was lost that day. Of course, Hiroshima and Nagasaki were also seared into our retinas, and the destruction occurred even more rapidly, virtually instantaneously, and on a much vaster scale. But the mind also forgets rapidly. That was another era, before the ubiquity of television. Besides, we were at war, and they were the enemy. They had attacked us without warning. Yes, and they, the people of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, were civilians going about their lives, merely people living in cities. They too suffered at the hands of their leaders, who were pursuing their own ideas of imperial grandeur and a sense of being right, which is always an unexamined fact when it is your tribe. True, they were part of the tribe that chose to aggress, but those women and children and the elderly and the laborers probably had as little to do with Pearl Harbor or the rape of Nanking as the stock traders at Cantor Fitzgerald had to do with grievances in the Muslim world. Perhaps it is time for us to realize once and for all that there is only one tribe here, that there is only one planet that we all inhabit, one living body suffering from inflammations and infections that are crying out to be soothed, salved, and healed. If we keep distracting ourselves from the ways in which our actions generate hatred and contempt, if we say one thing but do another, profess democratic ideals but then force issues because we have enough power to do so, if we persist in thinking that we can market ourselves to the world rather than embodying our deepest principles in our policies and actions, we will not be able to name, face, or heal the source of the worldwide dis-ease. Perhaps it is time for us to linger collectively in the suspension of distraction and re-examine how we treat and understand each other and how we hold our own suffering so that it leads to wisdom, not greater ignorance and even more suffering for ourselves and for others. We might truly come to know peace because we would be peaceful. Not naive, not weak, not powerless, but truly powerful, peace embodying and peace appreciating in our true strength, in our true wisdom. Why on earth not?